Welcome to the Jeffers Brief, only on Contra Radio Network.
And good evening. John Jeffers here, the Jeffers Brief, only on Contra Radio Network. Glad you're here. Want to do a shout out to the UK prepper girl. Made contact with her. Saw something that she posted some time ago, and she responded. Of course, she wanted to know if she could, you know, drop by the Facebook page, check it out. I said, absolutely, anytime you want. So if you see something posted by the UK prepper girl, give her a wave. Say hello. All right. Tonight, a little bit of both. We're going to try to fit both a prepper and a patriot episode in, but prepper first. One of the things that, what is that? Get out of here. Sometimes it's good for us to go, you know, touch on basics again, especially for your new people, your new listeners. You're not always sure where to start, what to do. That's understandable. I get it. Most of us do. We've all been there. So, let's talk about stockpiling water. Why? How to do it? It's always good to do the refresher on the basics. If you get the basics, you can get the you can build on the rest of it, right? Oh boy. Well, we're expecting some severe thunderstorms around here sometime tonight, between now and the next sunrise. So if the electricity goes out, don't panic. Nothing that bad. So Final Prepper put this out, and I thought, you know what, it's a good idea to put out, you know, let's touch the basics again. Excuse me. One of the things that we want to do, and prepping in one of its most basic forms, is about water and food storage. And we need to ask ourselves, why do we need to store water for emergencies? All right, it's a simple answer to a question. It's one you probably already know. We all need water to survive. And if you go without it for a while, your health will deteriorate. You get headaches, become lethargic and weak. Go with water for more than a couple days and you die. Water, or lack of sufficient clean drinking water, more than anything else, will kill you. Now, I want you to know, when I first started doing the show, I always brought up the point. I said, you know, one of the things you have to realize is that if the grid goes down, and that means the electric grid as well, most of you who don't have wells, you have city water and sewer, you're done. No electricity, no water pumps, no water pumps, no water. It's that simple. And you will start to see really bad things within 72 to 96 hours. That's 3 to 4 days where people don't have enough water. They can't get anything to drink. You will dehydrate. You will die. It is that simple. So, getting back to it, you know, that much, it's pretty simple. Usually, everyone can accept the premise that, without even blinking an eye, that you will die without water. What they frequently have problems with is this idea that you could never, ever find yourself without clean drinking water. We, in virtually all of the developed world, have water treatment facilities, plumbing, systems that can bring clean water inside the house or offices, and you would be hard-pressed to walk anywhere, and even the smallest cities, without quickly finding nice, clear plastic bottles of water for sale. But what if that water in the tap was tainted? What if the tap no longer put forth clean, shiny water? What if the stores, with all those bags and bags of bottled water, were emptied? This is where prepping begins, my friends. So, to prepare, you have to do something proactively. You can't wait. If you wait, you're done. You know, was it Ricky Bobby said, if you're not first, you're last? it kind of applies with prepping. You got to start prepping now when the grid is up, when things are good. So when things go bad, you have something to fall back on. It's pretty simple, right? It's a simple concept. We all understand that. So it isn't wise, it is not wise to sit back and say things like, well, that would never happen. Or the personal favorite, oh, the government will take care of us if that happened. Really? Really, you think so? I'm not criticizing FEMA. I think FEMA's got an impossible task. Basically, FEMA, the Federal Emergency Management Agency, has been tasked with prepping for 315 million people. Yeah, it's a lot. And I'm not saying they don't do a good job. I'm not saying they do a good job. What I do know is this. All right, this is going to sound harsh to you, and some of you are going to get pissy with me, but I'm going to say it anyways. It's easier to take care of dead people than it is people who are still alive, because dead people don't use up resources. Okay? Some of you are kind of shocked, I know, but think about it. Think about that for a moment, would you? In any large emergency, you'll be reliant upon yourself, as evidenced in almost every case in recent history. Yes, disaster relief organizations and government assistance will usually mobilize, but do you want to wait for that to happen? Even the government tells you to prepare on its website, ready.gov. If they are saying not to wait for them, what does that tell you? Right? Hey, puppy dog. The banjo Malinois, the Maligator's here in the studio with me tonight. So the next question is, how much water do you need to survive? If we can agree that everyone needs to stockpile water, but the next obvious question is how much? The amount of water you need vary greatly depending on a few different factors. A general rule of thumb is that you need 1 gallon of water per person per day. This assumes hydration needs and hygiene. You won't necessarily drink a gallon of water, but you might need it for reconstituting freeze-dried food, cleaning cooking implements, or washing your body. On some days, you might not even need a gallon of water. Other days, you could end up needing much more than 1 gallon if you are exerting yourself physically or the temperatures are elevated and you are losing fluids to perspiration. In my opinion, water is one of the easiest preps to cross off your list since it is so vital. It made the cut as the first in the series. To calculate how much water you need, just multiply the number of people you are prepping for by the number of days you want to be stocked up for. So, for example, in my family, I have those who live with me, that's 4 people, as well as extended family who I plan will come to our location, another 4 potentially, as well as some friends, so add 4 to that. So we're looking at a potentially needing to supply water for 12 people. So 12 people for 1 month is 12 times 30 equals 360, so you need 360 gallons of water stored. Now, what's the best place to store water? You know, that 360 gallons, that's just for 1 month. What if the emergency lasts longer than a month? What if the town's water supply is still not safe for drinking at that point? 360 gallons takes up a lot of room, no matter how you look at it. If you have 55-gallon barrels in your basement, that is still 6 barrels, and again, that assumes everyone is staying at or under their 1 gallon a day limit. Now, we have a few different ways you can store water. The first is stored in heavy-duty plastic containers that hold 7 gallons each. Now, these are great because they are more portable. They stack, and you can get home storage. You get some storage in smaller spaces like the shelves of a pantry. You can easily transport a few of these to your bug-out vehicle if necessary, but this storage will only last a week. 7 gallons, 1 gallon a day. After that, you have rain barrels that hold 50 gallons apiece. The great thing about rain barrels is that they can be refilled by Mother Nature without you having to do anything except make sure the water is disinfected. But this requires an outside location, and not everyone has a home on land where they can back up a barrel under the gutter. people who live in apartments have different space limitations, obviously. For apartment dwellers, I would recommend using the stackable storage, but diversify that around your apartment so you don't have that weight all in one space. Usually any apartments are built on concrete substrates, so even several hundred pounds of water in a closet wouldn't risk compromising the floor. You could also try storage facilities if necessary. So what do you do when the water runs out? No matter how much water you have stored up, it could still run out in the worst emergency, so it is important to have alternate plan to acquire good water afterwards. Actually, I think it is more important to plan to procure water than it is to stockpile it in the long run. Waterborne bacteria and viruses are not something you want to encounter in a disaster situation. Stomach bugs, even minor, can put you down and give you diarrhea, which means you start to dehydrate. So who wants to worry about getting sick when the world ends, much less crapping yourself all the time when the toilet paper is in short supply anyway? A simple, reliable method of making your water safe to drink is also very important. Now, boiling water is a surefire way to kill all bacteria and viruses. The drawback to this approach for me is that you have to start a fire and use a container. The fire could alert people to your location, and that might not be what you want. Also, you have to wait for the water to cool before, you can drink it. And boiling it isn't going to get out any sediment. It will just make your water safer to drink. Now, you could prefer a gravity filter for the ease of use, compactness, and filtration ability. With a filter like the Platypus Gravity Works, you can quickly filter 4 liters of water just by filling up a bag, and it's ready to drink in minutes, literally. It has been, we filtered 2 liters in less than 2 minutes. It's that fast. There's also using bleach to disinfect, water purification tablets, and even iodine, but these aren't without their drawbacks too, and do require you to wait for the chemicals to work. It's your choice, but there are options. So make sure you have plans to supply the water needs of your own survival group at the initial point of any emergencies, and long after by crafting your water preparedness plan now. Yes? Good information? I think so. I think it's good information. That's why I give it to you. Oh, my. Let's see. What can we do here? I already know how to do that. There was an article that says how to back up a trailer. I've done that. I've got a 34-foot one. I hate it, but I can do it. Let's see what else we got. What do we got here? So many things, so little time. So many things. This sounds kind of interesting. Let me take a quick look at it here, and I will decide for you whether it is worthy of your attention or not. You know what? You know what? Yes. Okay. We've all faced this, and it's time to talk about it. How many times have you told your family or friends, you've mentioned it casually, that you're a preparer, you're a prepper, you're a survivalist, you're preparing for when the good times are no more? And of course, you've gotten the looks, the stares, the comments, most notably from your family. Remember this. For the most part, the vast majority of us, when it comes to your family and your family members, you have no credibility with them. Why? Because they're your family members. They know you. They've known all your successes, all your failures, and they're not afraid to remind you of all your failures time and time again. So, you hear the, 10 hats, the usual, the crap. Well, Alexander Kane decided to talk about it. And there is a very old and astute adage by George Santayana stating, "Those who cannot remember the past are condemned to repeat it." So how many times in the past have people condemned or criticized people that they didn't understand for their beliefs or practices? So let's quickly look at a few examples of what we're talking about. In the colonial days predating our country, there are women who are practiced healers, who use various extracts and potions made from various natural sources, you know, plants, animals, to heal sick and injured people. The masses of ignorant people around them were quick to condemn what they themselves could not comprehend or understand, and called these earlier naturopaths witches, and promptly rallied to have them burned at the stake. Not more than 20 or 30 years ago, our so-called modern medical institutes condemned acupuncture as hokum, and those who practiced it were labeled with many derogatory terms. Of course, as of late, the masses have come to embrace the value of that ancient medical discipline. In the movie The Day the Earth Stood Still, when the extraterrestrial being emerged from his spaceship, what did the ignorant masses do? The first reaction was to kill what they couldn't comprehend or understand. In reality, there are too many of these kind of people, some of whom are in places of power and or have the ability to influence many others. It sadly, it seems that even today, we are still surrounded by people who are quite willing to demonize and condemn anything or anyone they cannot understand, even if it is a function of their own lack of knowledge or ability. And possibly worst of all, some people are in fact intimidated by knowledge and will openly or secretly lash out against it. Now, I'm sure that some readers already think that this is certainly the case with the perception of preppers by a lot of people. You know, have to agree with it. But that is not necessarily the focus of what we're going to talk about. In the early 1900s, Nikola Tesla was working on an amazing project that would have allowed people and households to capture useful amounts of energy from the empty space around them without using any wires. And I'm not referring to solar, wind, or hydroelectric power. I'm talking about the energy derived from the electromagnetic radiation at radio frequencies, also known as RF energy. Now, back in Tesla's day, most people laughed and thought of his idea as crazy and scoffed at the concept, calling it insane. Not to mention that such a revolutionary idea was an affront to the wealthy industrialists who were mining the copper that would be used for wiring to electrify the nations of the world. Now, of course, today, the long-distance, high-voltage transmission cables that span the North American continent are the Achilles heel of the national electrical grid, given their vulnerability to geomagnetic storming. Of course, there are a few people who realized the genius of Tesla's ideas and inventions and realized he had knowledge of things well beyond the comprehension of most people. Well, that's because he was an alien. And even today, there are many people who still don't realize that you can transmit and harvest electromagnetic radiation, not solar, and that RF energy is all around us and passing through most structures as well as our bodies on a 27/7 basis. So here's a very enlightening video, and I'll let me see if I want to post it or not. I don't know yet. So anyways, a considerable amount of that energy is produced by man-made devices and systems which have been introduced into our environment relatively recently in terms of historical timelines related to the evolution of biologic systems. Now, as a result, scientists are playing a desperate game of catch-up in their attempt to assess the effects of the myriad number of frequencies or electromagnetic radiation that are being continuously transmitted through the tissues and cells of our bodies and those of other organisms around us. Now, it's a daunting task, no doubt, given that there are likely hundreds of thousands of potential cellular and chemical structures in the organic life forms on Earth, each potentially having a unique resonant frequency. That's the exact frequency that would stimulate a potential adverse effect. Now, bioelectromagnetism is a field of study that relates to the effects and interactions between biological organisms and electromagnetic fields. It is science fact that electromagnetic fields can induce various effects in animals and humans, including changes in behavior. The experts in this field are just beginning to understand and realize some of the effects that are part of the much bigger picture. There are relatively very few people who are cognizant of the foregoing situation who may be taking certain precautionary measures to protect themselves. Such behavior is logical and is obviously based upon solid scientific information, not unlike an x-ray technician who wears a lead apron or places a lead blanket on a patient before giving an x-ray note. Even though I'm intrigued by science, I have not stated wearing any form of protection, just so you know. There are some people who are cognizant of these same phenomena but are taking less measured approach in prophylaxis. and hoping for the best. However, as we have seen historically, hoping for the best doesn't always pay off. Occasionally, you might see one of the people who are aware of the potential risk associated with the increased levels of man-made RF in our intimate living space and environment. These people are sometimes called the tin hat people. Most of them are actually using metal shielding materials other than tin, which is usually camouflage so they can remain stylish in public where the protective shielding remains unseen by casual observers. I have heard and read that people make jokes about tin hats and people who wear them. I would caution such people against making any such jokes. The people wearing the tin hats may have the last laugh. This is the last paradigm with preppers, who are also sometimes at the brunt of many jokes, and who may also, again, have the last laugh, so to speak. So don't feel like you have to be persecuted. Look, somebody, if you mention somebody to prepper or whatnot that you're prepping, you do not have to respond to them. You don't even have to answer any of their questions if you don't want to. Most people have never even heard of the term prepper. They have no idea what it means. If you say survivalist, okay, they might have heard that term. But as far as the word prepper, most people have not heard of it, and they sure as hell don't know what the definition of. Just the same. So, something I wanted to put out there for your edification. And welcome to the new people who did join us, the CRN list of subscribers and listeners. I appreciate it. I do. And with that said, we're going to call it this episode. We're going to end it right now. So my prepper and patriot friends, stay safe, stay alert, and stay vigilant, because you will never know when the last day is actually the last day. I'm John Jeffers here, The Jeffers Brief. Thanks for listening, and thanks for supporting Contra Radio Network. Good night.